Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Today's episode is brought to you by Hack the Entrepreneur, hack number 43. Don't struggle with failure. There's a difference between failure and your struggle with failure. You do not have to struggle with failure. That is a choice on your part. If you accept that the person who fails the most wins, you can also accept that putting a good effort into something that fails is a key part of your job. Seth Godin. Find this and 50 other hacks in my book, Hack the Entrepreneur, How to Stop Procrastinating, Build a Business, and Do Work That Matters. Grab your copy for less than $3 at htebook.com or go straight to Amazon and look up Hack the Entrepreneur.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a mother, former school administrator, blogger, and an entrepreneur. Back in late summer 2008, my guest began couponing, like really couponing. She loves to cook and loved the challenge of coming up with a meal that costs under $5. One night, as my guest was cleaning up the dishes from dinner, she thought of the phrase $5 dinners. And from this, a very, very impressive business was born. My guest is now the founder behind $5 dinners, $5 meal plan, and grocery budget makeover. Now, let's hack Aaron Chase. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Fizzle, honest online business training for aspiring entrepreneurs. Fizzle is the best place on the web to get in-depth training on how to build an independent business from scratch. Their small business roadmap is the step-by-step plan every entrepreneur wishes they had when they were getting started, and it's divided into three phases. Phase one, how to come up with a great business idea and launch your business. Then phase two, how to go from $0 of income to make enough money to pay your bills, support your family's basic needs. Phase three, how to grow your business into a team and brand that will outlast you, or maybe just a healthy company that provides a great life for you and your family. The roadmap is backed up by in-depth how-to video courses that will teach you everything from coming up with a business idea to growing your email list to building your first product to advanced business growth tactics. Fizzle has trained more than 10,000 aspiring entrepreneurs to date, and it is training that is honest, fun, and affordable. Right now, every single listener of Hack the Entrepreneur is eligible to get a 5-week free trial to see if Fizzle is right for you. To start your trial right now, go to fizzle.co/hack. That's fizzle.co/hack. For 5 weeks of free training for being a Hack the Entrepreneur listener. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very special guest. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely my pleasure. This is going to be a lot of fun, I think. Let's jump straight into it, Aaron.
Love it. Let's do it.
Aaron, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
The first thing that like immediately jumps into my head in hearing that question is I strive for inbox zero, and I don't achieve it every single day as the inbox zero people would want me to, but I keep it really low. Like if I have more than 10 pending emails in my inbox, then, you know, I just sort of, not overwhelmed is not the right word because it takes a lot for me to get overwhelmed, but just sort of like, oh my goodness, how am I don't want to get too behind and yada yada. And I think the main motivation for that is to serve my customers. I do have somebody who helps me with customer support emails, but a lot of the customer support I feel and I want to respond to personally. So that I know that, so that my customers know that I am here, that I am accessible. That's very important to me, even though they know I have a team and they know I have Shane and Jen, like they, I still want them to know that I will respond to them. Does that make sense? And if I was buried in email, there would be no way to keep up with that, keep that customer, I guess, morale and connection where it should be or where I want it to be. And that's not to say I respond to every email. I don't, but I do consume all of them because I need to know what my customers are struggling with. I need to know what's not working for them from my products, right? What is and isn't working from what I've given to you and what is and isn't working just in your life in general as it relates to, in my case, grocery shopping. For different entrepreneurs, it'll be whatever your niche is, right? So that's really important to me. So I would say that being able to manage my email very efficiently is probably what keeps me able to move as fast as I do without being overwhelmed or getting caught in the sludge of whether it's admin or what. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. Yeah. And so there was two things there. One thing I checked as you were answering, and I have currently have 851 emails sitting in my inbox. So I got stressed.
Work on this, John.
Yeah, as you were talking, I'm like, I'm already getting stressed. Like, oh my goodness. But so there's the fact of how the heck do you actually get through all those emails in an efficient way? But then there's the other one where I understand the whole customer morale and connection, and you don't want to let that go because you want to know what's working, what's not. But at the same time, is delegation of these tasks that have sort of like a contact with the customer directly, are those things that are hard for you to delegate?
No, because I already have. I mean, I already have two people who respond to customers on a regular basis for me already.
Nice.
It just certain ones I want to take care of and certain ones they know to send back to me for me to respond personally. Does that make sense? Like we've just kind of.
Yeah, that does actually. That's really
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. So it's not all me. Oh my word. No way. There, the volume that we have just of customer service issues is too much for me to handle. And then you add on just the people who are signing up for my newsletter. I ask them in the first autoresponder email, I ask they get the freebie, the opt-in, the set of recipes. And then the second email is at the very end of the email after it's a pretty good long email, I would say for an autoresponder, it's just an introduction to me and in my story. And then at the very end, I ask them what their struggles are. What's their current struggle and challenge with grocery shopping and meal planning? And I tell you what, people have all kinds of great things to say. And I need to know, I need to be in tune with my customer. That's so important to me because how else am I supposed to know what the next product should be? How else am I supposed to know when it's time to pivot or persevere with this particular brand or product? Or does that make sense? If I'm not in tune with that or my team isn't in tune with that reporting back to me, how I can't make decisions, right? So that's really important to me. And that's one of the reasons that I keep it slow. So how does it happen? I run everything through Gmail or through Google Mail. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of filters set up. I don't see a lot of email that I think a lot of people do see. I'm subscribed to very few newsletters, very, very few. Only the ones that I know can make an impact on me personally or in my business. And I just either delete them or archive them really quickly if there's no action needed. So, okay, so it's do, right? Delegate, which I do that a lot with between Jen and Shane. Or my tech guy, if it's a tech issue, delete or defer, right? So those are the four D's. So do, this is not new. I don't know who made that up, but those are my four D's. Do, delegate, delete, and defer. So what I do when I defer something, if it's something that's going to take me a while that I need to look at, like I need to spend a good solid 30 minutes reviewing this template, or I need to, if it's something like that, I'm not going to leave it in my inbox to sit there and like taunt me like you need to take care of me today or tomorrow or the next day. I'm going to move that out of my inbox, just archive it, put it on my calendar with some either keyword or the subject line or something so that I can go find it quickly again in my inbox, right? Or in my email. It's not sitting in front of me in my inbox, but it's hidden. And I know that on Thursday at 9:30, whenever I've slotted it, I'm going to come back and open up that printable template and I'm going to review it and give feedback to my designer, right?
That's cool.
Does that make sense? So I defer that particular action item or thing in my inbox that I need to respond to to a time where I know I can mentally dedicate the brain space and time to take care of that particular action. And that's more for things that are going to take me longer than a quick response, right? So, and then I probably do email like 2.5 times a day, morning, afternoon, and then maybe delete some stuff or quick one sentence responses from my phone at night. But I try not to do that. It just depends on the day and what kind of an issue there is, or if there's some sort of an emergent something or other, but try to keep it at, 2.5-ish.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's smart.
Just to keep it under control. Cause then I can't, otherwise I would just feel overwhelmed and like I was drowning all the time. And that's not a way to feel when you're trying to power through and run fast and furiously to keep your business growing, scaling up and all of those things. So.
Yeah. So the deferral, I totally agree. That's once I discovered that in the last 12 months, I used something called Boomerang. It's an app that you literally, it's an option. You just pick the time and date you want it to pop back and it comes back into your inbox. Okay. It's time to deal with it. But your way is better because I have 841 emails and you have none. So obviously.
Well, currently 10.
Oh, okay. Well, I have 85 times as many. So, but. And so I love the idea of running your business fast and furiously, wanting it to grow, but we need to go back a bit because I believe the story goes that in summer of 2008, you began couponing.
Right.
And then somewhere after then, between then and now, you've created a really, really impressive business out of this. You decided that it should be like that it was, you came up with $5 dinners as an idea and a name, and then you kind of ran with it. But I would love to know how this sort of evolved, because like, did you have any like foot in the internet space before? Did you have any idea what you were doing to get started?
Yes and no. How about that?
Yeah,
so I did have a family blog. Actually, I had two. We lived in Ohio. My family was in Texas. So I had two websites that I updated for my kids then. So I was familiar with websites. I had like created my own header and I had installed that into a Blogspot blogger site way back. So I knew how to start a website. I knew a little bit of code, a little bit, about the same amount that I still know now. But I knew it. I quickly passed all of that off because I would blow something up if I kept on or if I tried to code anything or fix anything on my website. But so I knew about blogging, I guess, in a very hobby-like way. So I started $5 Dinners knowing how to start a blog and knowing how to write a blog post and write a recipe in the case of $5 Dinners and write an article. I knew how to do that. I did not know or understand that it could be a business and that it could earn a full-time income. I had no idea that was possible. I had heard about and obviously seen like Google ads, right? And this was, AdSense was one of the very few networks to choose from as far as display networks go back then. And so I knew that that existed. And I thought that I could earn like 10 cents a month, right? So I just didn't bother with it because I didn't understand that it really did make more money than 10 cents, or it could make more money than 10 cents a month. So I think it was into my second month, 8 weeks, 10 weeks in, I was reading a post from another food blogger who I had befriended just via email, because this was sort of before Twitter was even a thing. And so she had mentioned that she had made enough money on her ads to buy her groceries for that month. And I thought, well, she lives in San Francisco. She must spend like $400 or $500 on groceries a month, and she's a food blogger. Like, and she's not budget friendly. She's not like a budget blogger, like budget food blogger like I am, but I thought she's gotta be spending at least $400 or $500 a month. She had three kids and I thought, what is she talking about? So I emailed her and I'm like, what are you talking about? She goes, oh yeah, I'm on the Blog Her network and this is how much traffic I get. And I'm like, what? I just didn't realize that you could make hundreds of dollars a month. And granted, I did have, by that point, I did have already 1,500, 2,000 page views a day. So it grew pretty fast as far as volume on the website. And so once I wised up and thought, oh, I really should have advertisers on the site, then I think, so then what, 3 or 4 weeks later, I went to check in my dashboard, and sure enough, I had made like $253 or something like that. And I was kind of like, what is this? Huh? Like it's not that it didn't add up. It was just shocking to me that me just posting a recipe, which took me, I don't know, maybe 20, 30 minutes to do each day, 5 days a week, could earn me $250. That was shocking to me. So pretty quickly after that, I kind of wised up and surrounded myself with people who knew better than I did. Those people are still my inner circle people today. And we all learned together. We all shared what was working and what wasn't working and what to try, what not to try. We brainstormed ideas, you know, almost like a mastermind in a way that they're so popular nowadays. We had that then. Not really calling it that though. So that's, I think, a big part of my success in getting everything going was just partly the volume, because the concept resonates with people, and two, surrounding myself with people and learning myself how to, you know, actually turn this into an actual business. So that all happened, I think, within probably the first 6 months. And ever since then, like the evolution of it, you asked, it's just been this, I wouldn't say following the trends, because I'm really, I don't know, I'm following what customers need, really, is what it comes down to. And we've already talked about that. So just, you know, evolving and creating different things and just being clever and let's try this. Does that stick? Nope. Okay, we're going to try something else. I have an idea that I want to work on right now. It's not a big thing. It would just be, let's throw this out there and see if it works. And if it sticks, it could do amazing things. And if it doesn't, I'll move on to the next thing. Does that make sense? So it's kind of one of those.
Yeah, but is it really that easy? Like, is it really based on this first welcome email to your newsletter? Some people, like two people tell you they need something and you're just, we should go all in and make a product around this?
Okay, but more than two people tell me what they need.
okay, cool.
Dozens of these a day.
Yeah. And so you look for the one that is most popular, or like, are you always actively looking for the next problem, or is it just that it gets so overwhelming that it's like, okay, just constant every day there's 10 people telling me the same thing that I just have to fix this for them?
Yes, I think so. It's that, and then it's, you know, it's just clever ways to hack the marketplace, right? So like Amazon Prime Pantry is a new thing. It's new. It's catching on. People are talking about it via email with me and in my face. I have several pretty large Facebook groups. And it's like, should I develop a meal plan based on like pantry meals where they can get a majority of the ingredients from an Amazon Prime Pantry box?
Oh.
Should I do that? Because it's a new thing. People are talking about it. Instapot recipes. Should I develop a meal plan for Instapot recipes? Because holy moly, unless you've not been on the internet lately, they're everywhere, right? They just came out of nowhere. So it's that kind, but does my audience base, can they afford to buy another $150 kitchen appliance? So does it even make sense for me to develop an Instapot recipes meal plan if only three of my customers have an Instant Pot. Sorry, I'm not saying that right. Instant Pot. Does that make sense? So it's just evaluating all these things, and just the feedback that I get is just, I guess my wheels are always spinning from the feedback and watching trends. And do we do anything with Instant Pot? So I'm actually going to have a friend do a guest post to see what the response is before we go crazy developing anything, right?
That's smart.
I get a lot of feedback for diabetic type meal plans. And that's really tricky because you have different types of diabetics and you have different types of diabetics on different types of medications. So would one meal plan be able to cater to all of those different diabetics? Probably not, according to my dietitian friend. So it's, you know, you kind of have to, there's all these little factors you have to weigh in deciding what's next to develop.
Yeah. Did you ever, going into it, did you ever worry that a $5 dinner fan base or readership wouldn't want to pay for things or have the means to pay for things?
No, because for me, in the way I position products and the way I talk about them, I try to emphasize the value of them. And so my cheapest product is $2.49, $2.49, not $249, $2.49, right? And then my most expensive is an extreme video course with coaching calls and all kinds of video content, worksheets, like direct access to me. That's $79. And when I, and it's not a ton of direct access to me, but it is direct access to me. And when I do my courses, I have three price points. And when you look at, you know, the middle one being the featured product, the higher price point being the one fewer people will purchase. When I look at my percentages, right, I want 20% to be buying the top tier. I want 20% to be buying the bottom tier. And I want 60% buying the core product, right? And when I look at the breakdown of the sales, those are the numbers that I hit. Those are the numbers I want to hit. So that's how I know that I have the product tiers priced correctly for my audience.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense.
I don't know that those price points would work for Andrea's audience or Tony's audience, right? Or Heather's audience. They might need to be higher or lower. But for me, when I know that I hit that percentage breakdown in sales, I know that my price points are correct. And I have had so many people say, you need to charge more for this. And I say, I would alienate so many customers if I did. So no, I'm not going to. I'm comfortable with these prices. The profit margin is not ginormous, but that's okay because I have the volume and I can, you know, sort of like Walmart style, right? Like, mm-hmm. They can charge less and focus on value because they have just volume. And so for me, in the meal plan space, anyways, I feel like I can stay under competitor prices because I have volume already. So
that's cool. That's really cool. Do you figure out or focus on like lifetime value of your customer? And so you know that on average, a customer will buy six products with me. And if they're from $249 to $79, it's worth this much. Do you go that deep? Do you need
for,
to?
For one of our businesses, we do. I have three separate, well, soon to be four separate, I guess, brands, but all within like the same umbrella or same goal of helping people spend less money on groceries. So for our weekly meal plan subscription service, yes, we do calculate that. And that helps us obviously determine our spend for advertising and customer acquisition. So for that, I do. I don't, because I have such a hefty base and newsletter base, I don't do that for $5 dinners. Could I? Should I? Would it help me grow faster? Maybe, but I'm just focusing on content, new product development to meet the needs and the gaps that I see in people's lives. So yeah. I would rather spend my time on that, you know, product development cycle, product development, product launch cycle, than really digging into the numbers.
Yeah, and that's smart.
I'm seeing like the real life numbers, maybe, and that's not the analysts who are listening to this, and my guy Carl would be like, oh my gosh, I do have somebody who has helped me with conversion rates and all of that, but it's he's probably like cringing. If you listen, he would cringe, but yeah, so that's important to me. Numbers is not my gift, which is why I have people help with it, because it's not something that I would rather spend time on content relationships and meeting needs for people.
Well, yeah, you can't focus on everything, especially you specifically. But are you the person who creates the product still? Or do you outline a product and then have somebody create it at this point?
Both.
Both.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So you have delegated off some product creation. I guess as long as it's outlined enough and taken from existing sort of content or things you've done.
Yeah, it is. It's very, I am very much an efficiency and systems nerd. So we have like everything is very, I mean, we have guidelines for everything. We have formatting guidelines. We have phrase guidelines.
Really?
Oh, it's, yeah.
That's awesome.
It's pretty in depth, and there's two people. There's three layers on our editing team, and I'm the final layer, so I have my eyeballs and everything just so I know what's going out. Right, mm-hmm. I decide what's going out. It's produced, and then I final eyeballs before it goes out. So, yeah, we have a system for that for sure.
That's great, and wow. So you created, like, I'm just trying to get my head around. So a new product idea comes and you want to create it. Do you go through and sort of map it all out physically, like on a whiteboard sort of thing? That, you know what I mean? Like, I know people are thinking like, wow, you create so many products, and how do I even create one product? Like, what's the sort of, and the systems approach to it? If you were making, I guess, a meal plan guide, would you just start with, okay, we need to cover these ones, and then we need to go so many points in depth on each, and then we need to tie it all together with a checklist? Or how is this process? How do you know what works and what your customers want?
Again, it goes back to feedback. I didn't mention this, but after everybody purchases something, they get a survey asking how it went. Oh. How did you like the meals? Like, every Friday morning at 9:30, I check our surveys, you know, so I'm pretty in tune. But again, like I said, every Friday at 9:30, I check them, you know, and some of them I'll respond to, and some of them I'll just read, right, to see. And so that I think helps. But as far as like process goes, I do have a number of checklists that I have two. I have one just for meal plan creation, and I just go through it. And when I'm done, I pass it off to Jen and she edits. And when she's done, she passes it off to the designer to put it all, which also happens to be her husband, who puts it all into a pretty format, and then we final edit it, and then it's done. So, and we've done it enough times that literally it's just like plugging and pasting new content into existing templates and formats. And then for like, I'm getting ready to launch a new freezer cooking meal plan website. So this is just freezer cooking meal plans. So some of the feedback that I get is that, you know, I have so many different types of meal plans. People have a hard time figuring out which one is best for them or finding the one they want. So part of that is one of the ways I'm going to solve that. One of the ways is with the quiz to help you figure out which is best for you. And the other way is to completely pull out anything that's freezer cooking is going to be its own. It's going to fall under its own brand. And so launching a brand is a whole nother set of checklists, right? Yep. So, I've done that before a couple of times, both for myself and as a consultant. So I understand everything that goes into that process, everything from checking the trademark database to make sure it's not trademarked, all the way through to getting it out the door and deciding how much to spend in the first 3 months on customer acquisition. Right. When you don't have any revenue for that particular brand, like, how do you balance that? So, you know, having been through that before a couple of times, I have it all sort of mapped out from website creation, website content, you know, product creation, product content, you know, video shoot scheduling, all that stuff. Like, it just,
it's basically just a bigger template.
Right.
Rather than a report.
Yes. Yeah. It's instead of one of my meal plans. I mean, in my meal plans, they're 20 pages long in a Word document. By the time we go from the table of contents, how to use this, the recipes all listed out, the assembly all listed out, you know, it ends up being, you know, it's basically like a 20-page Word document. So as far as process goes, I type it all into a Word document. And then once it's all edited and proofed and been picked apart, like, I have Jen or I have beta recipe testers literally try and I say, find the holes, try to break it, like, figure out what's wrong with it so that I can fix it and make it more clear for anybody and everybody to use, right? So that's actually the stage that we're in right now with my freezer cooking website, is it's in kind of beta mode. And so people are emailing me all the time, well, this isn't clear. And in the video you said this, and in this, and then I got to make it more clear. Thank you. Please try and break it. Like, I want people to do that. And that might sound strange, like, no, this is my product. This is my baby. Well, no, it's for them, right? It's their product. It's going to make their life easier. So I need to make it work for them. So, yeah.
I think that's it right there. That's so true. It's not your baby, right? Because as soon as it, like, this doesn't work right, you said, it's like, this is free content is what I thought, but it's like, right. No, you're right. It needs to work. They need to get what they need out of it, right? It can't just be, it's not for you. You're just the creator of it.
Right.
It's literally for them. That's awesome. All right, Aaron, this has been a blast. I want to wrap up on one final question for you. So 2008 summer, you started couponing. Now, not even 8 years later, you have a successful business from this. You've come a long ways. You've learned a lot of things. But as entrepreneurs, sometimes we end up pushing our successes and projecting our success always into the future, meaning that when you launch that new site successfully, or when you launch that new product, or you hit that new revenue goal in 6 months, right before you hit that goal, you set bigger, loftier ones into the future. And sometimes we end up living in this gap where we are always looking for success that's ahead of us, and we're never sort of happy with where we are. And yes, we have to push ourselves ahead, but I would love right now, Aaron, if you could stop and turn around and look behind you at, in the last 8 years, where you've come from, what you've learned, the wins, the losses, the highs, the lows, and tell me how you feel about your journey up until today.
I mean, it's been an amazing ride. I probably discredit all the decisions I've made along the way, but it's really just been about me following trends, following customer feedback, identifying gaps and filling them. And that's what I'm going to continue to do. And, you know, I've obviously had success with that up until this point. And I think I'll just continue to do that. As far as living in the future, I think it's like, I feel like for myself, I live maybe like 4.5 days a week in the here and now. Like actually, I can't be thinking about the future if I'm not digesting all of the things I need to digest and creating all the things I need to create. And then the other half day, for sure, I'm all like, hey, what's next? What are we doing? Like, what can we achieve? You know, do I need to move into the physical product space on Amazon? Probably yes. You know, so there is that. But at the same time, I don't obsess over that, right?
Yeah.
I focus on the here and now and then obsess about it in a very pocketed, compartmentalized way, I guess, because otherwise I wouldn't get anything done if I was constantly thinking about the future.
Is that a specific half day? Is that like Friday afternoon? You allow yourself that?
Yeah, I do my weekly review on Fridays about 1 o'clock. And yeah. And then, I have 4 kids. Yeah. So I spend a lot of time in the car. I work until usually 2 or 3 every day. And then I'm in mom mode. So I do spend a lot of time, you know, in the car driving to pick them up from school, or, you know, if they're not talking to me, obviously we do have a lot of car conversations, but I find pockets to think when I'm not in front of the computer. Right. And I think that's advantageous to me too, to separate and have that time of, oh, I'm going to go off with the kids now. And in little moments of non-chaos and quiet, I can think about those things, I guess. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense.
But I could not do that if I was in front of the computer 9 to 7 every day, like I know some people are, which, you know, if you need to do that, you need to do that. But I think breaking away, having screen-free time allows your brain to sort of go that direction, right? Yeah. When you're not practically in there working and creating something.
And then it gives that division so that then when you are, like you said, those 4.5 days of working in the moment, I have to create this stuff now. I can't dream about the future.
Right.
That really puts you in that moment and you can get more done. So you're not
right.
Living half, like straddling the fence all the time between the future and That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah,
Aaron.
Because otherwise, I mean, yeah, you just talk yourself up in your own head and then you're like, that didn't work, you know, like that sucks.
Exactly. I totally agree. All right, Aaron, this has been a blast. We've got to talk about your business in passing, but can you specifically tell the listener where to find out more about your business and where they can find you?
Sure. So the best place, the main hub, I guess, is five. So $5dinners.com. Although I think if you spell it out, you'll get there as well. So $5dinners.com is my main website with all the recipes. And then I have spun off 2 meal planning websites and a video course, $5 meal plan, is a weekly meal plan subscription service. Grocery Budget Makeover is the 10-week video course. And the new Freeze Easy is my new freezer cooking meal plan website that is, I think, hopefully mid-February going to be ready for everyone. So, but Twitter, Facebook, I'm Instagram, I'm on all of those things all the time. So not all the time, but I have a very big presence in all of those places, and you can find me that way as well.
Excellent. So all the social medias, I'll track them down. $5dinners.com, $5 meal plan, grocerybudgetmakeover.com,
yep,
and freezeeasy.com.
Yep.
Excellent. I will link to all those in the show notes. So when you stop driving or working out, whatever it is you're doing, you can track those down and track Erin down there. She's great to get on social media, and you can follow up with any questions you may have. Otherwise, Erin, thank you again so much for stopping by. Thanks for taking the time to chat. And please just keep doing what you're doing, because it is awesome to watch.
Thank you. I will do my best. And I appreciate you having me on, John.
My pleasure. Erin, thank you so much. That was a lot of fun. The conversation I was expecting to have with you, being a food blogger and a coupon cutter, that I didn't think we'd go where we did. And I loved that we did. You are a really, really smart entrepreneur doing some really interesting things. And I actually went directly from this conversation into the Slack channel for my mastermind group because of the pricing. And one thing you said about pricing in there about when you have the three tiers. And I had to share that because one of my partners in the mastermind was, he was struggling with this himself, and you had it nailed. So that was a super, super fun conversation. I hope you listening out there to Erin and I talk enjoyed it as much as I did, because I really, really, really enjoyed it. And then I had to go back through, because besides that concept of the three-tiered pricing, I had to go back and listen to the conversation. And I went back and I listened to 5 different things. And then when I listened back, I got it down to 4. And then there was 3, and then there was 2. The last time I listened, there was this one thing that Erin said that it was so perfect. It was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
That's actually the stage that we're in right now with my freezer cooking website. It's in kind of beta mode. And so people are emailing me all the time. Well, this isn't clear. And in the video, you said this, and in this, and then I got to make it more clear. Thank you. Please try and break it. Like, I want people to do that. And that might sound strange. Like, no, this is my product. This is my baby. Well, no, it's for them, right? It's their product. It's going to make their life easier. So I need to make it work for them.
And that's the hack. Erin, I absolutely, this is awesome. So this is something that it's been brought up in the show before, but it is so important. It is so important because you're right. The way most people react to the email that says, this isn't clear or this isn't working for me, is to kind of be like, it's my product. This is my baby. Don't tell me what's no good, and you're just a terrible customer. And remember, always, whether it's a product or it's your whole complete business, it's not about you. It is never, ever, ever about you. If I ever start to think that this podcast is about myself and about doing something for me, then it's going to fall apart completely. It's not about you. It's always about the person on the other end, the person who's going to benefit. The way that you can help them in some sort of transformation in their life, in their business, in their habits, in whatever it is you are trying to work within, you have to help them make that sort of transformation in some way. And you have to educate, you have to entertain, or you have to inspire in any way. And your product needs to do that. Your podcast needs to do that. Your book needs to do that. Your blog post needs to do that. Your video needs to do that. It doesn't matter what you are creating. It doesn't matter if you're making an app. Or if you are a consultant, for somebody and you're helping them somehow generate more leads for a certain type of business, the transformation you have to make is from where they are to having more than enough leads than they ever know what to do with. If it's for consulting for advertising, there's a there's an analytic or a metric that they need to have achieved by you, and you need to help them make that transformation. That's you. It's not about how you can like look good doing it. It's not about how you can be so fast and efficient at it. That doesn't matter. It's only the transformation that matters, because it's not about you. It's always about them. And the product, the service, whatever it is always about the person consuming it. And you can never forget that. And it's really, really hard. It is. It's really hard when you put a lot of work into something and somebody emails you and tells you that your product is completely confusing or doesn't help them with that transformation, or your product is a piece of crap to that person. And it's like, well, either you targeted the person wrong and you just have the wrong person using it and you need to just kind of find the proper market for it, which happens a lot. Or it's that your product does actually need to be worked because you somehow created the product for yourself. And although I talk about scratching your own itch, that's just to get started. That's like, if you have this problem and you want to solve it for yourself, you then have to start solving it for somebody else who's like you. But the idea is sparked from you, but then you need to create it for that other person. Always, always, always. And so I love that she says this, and like, the please try and break it. Please try and make it be confused, and then tell me about it, and I'll make it less confusing, and I'll fix it so that it works always and forever for you and helps you with that transformation. But this is a key aspect of business, of product creation, of content creation, of any sort of creation, really, for that matter, is just always selflessly create it for the end person. Thank you, Aaron. I really, really appreciate you joining me. Well, that was an absolute blast. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the website. Are you on the email list? Are you? Are you? Every Sunday, best work. It's going right there. You should be on it. I know you will like it. I know you will. Also, hacktheentrepreneur.com/review. If you're on an iPhone or an iPad right now, type that in and you will go directly to the place where you can leave me a rating and a review. It takes like 2 to 3 minutes and I'd be so thankful. If you can, and you're also on Twitter, leave your Twitter name, your at, whatever your name is. I would love to go onto Twitter and thank you personally for leaving that rating and a review, or drop me an email if you'd like, and I'll thank you that way. But I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. It helps the show so much. HackTheEntrepreneur.com/review. But that's about all I got for you for today. Thank you so much for taking the time to stop by. I really do appreciate it. I know you have a lot of options, and I'm glad you spent today with me. It's been fun, I think. All right. Thank you so very much. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.